Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello and a very warm welcome to another Main Menu. Main Menu is ACB Radio Mainstream's regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. Main Menu relies on contributions from you, and if you'd like to produce an item for Main Menu, then drop us a line to mainmenu@acbradio.org. Main Menu is also made available to radio reading information services around the world and is available on demand. Coming up on a two-hour program this week, we start by hearing briefly about the release of WindowEyes 4.5 SP2. We follow that with our main feature this week, which is an extended interview with Steve Bennett, the European Sales Director of Dolphin Computer Access. We then hear the second of our GMA Tank Commander reviews, and the programme concludes this week by hearing a brief interview with Quantum Technology, recorded at this year's CSUN exhibition. That's all to come over the next 2 hours on Main Menu. On Monday the 26th of April, GW Micro introduced the most recent version of their WindowEyes screen reader, WindowEyes 4.5 SP2. WindowEyes 4.5 SP2 adds support for Windows XP SP2, which is due to be released later in the Northern Hemisphere's summer. WindowEyes now boasts support for many native Delphi window classes, many VB.NET controls, and Visual Dialog Script controls. WindowEyes 4.5 SP2 introduces support for the IsContent editable attribute in Internet Explorer. This should improve performance when using online webmail systems. Support has also been added for more types of tooltips and AOL Instant Messenger. The DoubleTalk PC driver has now been fixed, as have many Internet Explorer hangs and blowups. The status of MSAA mode is now remembered when switching between browser windows. Support has now been added for the Focus and PacMate Braille displays, and a number of Braille problems have now been resolved. GW Micro says that the long list of performance enhancements and bug fixes identified in the WindowEyes 4.5 SP2 release notes are as a direct result from user feedback using the unique WindowEyes error reporting feature. The set file format has changed between WindowEyes 4.5 SP1 and SP2, and your set files will be converted to the new format. This service pack is free to download if you have WindowEyes 4.5 Service Pack 1 or the 4.5 release itself. If you have either of these, you can simply update your WindowEyes software by selecting Update from Internet from the WindowEyes Help menu. If you'd prefer a CD, or you have a version of WindowEyes earlier than 4.5 and wish to upgrade, then you should call the GW Micro Sales Department on 260-489-3671. That number again is 260-489-3671. You should also call that number for a full list of updates and bug fixes in WindowEyes 4.5 SP2. As mentioned at the beginning of this item, WindowEyes 4.5 SP2 has been released in preparation for Windows XP Service Pack 2, which is just around the corner, and in the coming weeks, Main Menu will be looking at Windows XP Service Pack 2, and if you'd like to be involved in any aspect of that demonstration, then drop us a line to support@acbradio.org. Our main feature on Main Menu this week is an interview conducted for the programme by Martin Roberts, assistive technology guru, who's appeared on this programme previously. Martin spoke with Steve Bennett of Dolphin Computer Access, the distributors of the HAL screen reader, Lunar Magnifier and Supernova combined screen reader magnifier products. Martin began this comprehensive interview by asking Steve what it is that Steve does for Dolphin.
I look after the sales in Europe for our Access and our audio products, so I have the grand title of European Sales Director.
Right. What does that entail?
Well, it's quite enjoyable, actually. So I have to go around and see a lot of our customers in all across Northern Europe and Southern Europe. It also means that I get involved with the day-to-day running of the business from the sales side as well. So I have the best of both worlds. I get to do a little bit of travelling, and at the same time, I get to meet a lot of nice people, make some good friends.
Tell us a bit about Dolphin.
Dolphin Computer Access is a UK-based company primarily. The development department is based here in the UK. There are about 50 of us worldwide. We have another development department in Sweden, which looks after our Daisy Book or audio section. And we have offices in America or the US. And we also have offices that we're looking further afield in Holland as well. The company is made up into a series of smaller companies, and then there's a group. So Dolphin Computer Access Group is the holding company. Dolphin Computer Access Limited looks after the sales worldwide of the software, which is made by Dolphin Oceanic. And then Dolphin Audio Products creates all the audio stuff that we've just and that's based in Sweden. So it's all part of the same group. It's owned by the same people, and basically it's just one company.
And is Oceanic part of that? Because Oceanic developed the screen reader and magnification side, which we'll focus on shortly.
That's right. There was a slight change in the ownership a couple of years ago, and now Oceanic is within the group, wholly within the group.
Could I ask you, Steve, just a little bit about the way that the industry works now, in respect that we're now seeing a little bit more cooperation between the screen reader vendors in some areas. For example, the DCM, you all cooperated on that. Has that been an enriching experience for you all, and do you think it bodes well for the future and future access for operating systems?
Yeah, I really do. I think it's been a very positive experience for the companies and for the users, in two ways really. I mean, the users have benefited because more than one access company or software can reside on the same machine, which in some cases has been difficult in the past. But for the companies, it's actually brought them a little bit closer together in terms of making sure that there was a common standard. So again, bringing with Microsoft, I think it was really important. But it hasn't diminished that real competitive edge that exists between the companies. It's been really important, I think, for the end users in particular.
I think the screen reader industry at the moment, as far as features and other services that the vendors offer now, it's better than it has been for quite a few years. And that could be attributed to the fact that everyone's working for a common goal now. But what I need to ask is, because you did the DCM support, did that bring everyone a bit closer with Microsoft and give you a bit more power to get Microsoft actually listening to the access vendors? Because in the past, it was Microsoft seemed to release software without listening to what access vendors had to say and release operating systems.
Do you know, I think it did. I have to say this type of cooperation is not done at my level. It's really done at the highest development level. So the head of software development at Dolphin would be speaking to his opposite numbers at the other companies. But I think you'll find that in the future that software is being developed at Microsoft now much more in cooperation rather than in the past where the access companies have tried to have to work what's there.
Sure.
So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, I think, which I hope will benefit everybody in the future. You have to remember that there are some laws around now, Section 508 in Europe, the DDA, which really mean that it's with everyone's interest to make sure that this all works straight away.
Okay, so now we'll move on to the real meat, the information that people really want to know about the products that you offer. Could you explain about the different levels of product that you offer?
Yes, I can. So we make a range, a suite of products, we like to think of it as. So Luna is our magnification product. It's an excellent magnifier, but obviously I'd be biased.
You would
say
that, wouldn't you?
I think so. We can get 0 to 32 times. We've got lots of visual enhancements. We can do colour changes, different magnification options for people. Luna Plus has all of the options of Luna, plus what we call enhanced speech. So for the magnification user that likes to have that document read back to them, or perhaps late in the afternoon after using the computer, they want to be able to hear the controller on announced as well, they can turn the speech on and have that. So it's a magnification that's just enhanced with speech.
Does that speech work with the internet as well?
No. Primarily for that, you'd need something like a screen reader.
Right, okay.
Okay, and that's HAL, and HAL's our screen reader. It's a four-screen reader, also has Braille output, and we're very proud of the Braille output that we've worked with the Braille manufacturers. We feel it's probably the best on the marketplace.
One of your unique features, of course, are Braille hooks, I believe. Well, I don't know of any other product that has them.
Mm. I find a lot of users use them a great deal. Being able to have a particular part of the screen hooked for, say, the clock, or a particular part of the screen that you want to monitor, it doesn't have to, you can also make sure that it's in a position that suits you on the Braille display as well. Very useful.
And finally, you've got Supernova, haven't you?
Which is HAL and Luna put together, but as one product. So we have a different set of hotkeys for Luna than we do for HAL. When they come together, it's a product called Supernova. So it's a full screen reader, magnification and Braille. So you can use one, two or all three together, whatever you prefer.
Which is definitely a first, I believe, still even. It's amazing that no one else has cottoned onto this idea yet. You're very lucky.
I think we're very lucky because it's quite hard to do. So the development department did very well here.
Okay, Steve, I know you'll probably be dying to get into version 6, as will everybody else listening, but can we step back to version 5.3 first? Because I don't think we really gave much time to that on Main Menu, although I briefly mentioned it in the summary I did with Dave at the end of last year, which can be found in the archives. So what new features did you add into 5.3?
Okay, well, there were a couple in there, a couple of small ones and perhaps a bigger one. We included magnification at the login prompt for Luna, Luna Plus and Supernova. That people found extremely useful. It was so the magnification was run as a service there.
Sure.
Magnification of Java. So there was keyboard support for Java applets. Most of the emphasis in 5.30 was really support for terminal services, and in particular Citrix MetaFrame XP.
Is that working well for you? Are the people using that now, and how is that going down?
Well, I'm ever so pleased to say it's been really good for us. Lots and lots of clients have moved over to Citrix, and we've been able to make sure that the people that have been employed, when the technology has changed, that they've maintained their positions. It's been very rewarding for us.
So it's good to see a UK company being second to that technology, pioneered by someone else, I guess, but you've very quickly stepped up to the plate. And does it offer all the options? Is it kind of magnification, speech and Braille, or is it just a number of them that you can offer through Citrix at the moment?
No, you have all of the options. Basically, Supernova is installed on the Citrix server. What happens then is, as a thick client, you can install the synthesizer and what we call the SAM element actually onto the thick client, which can be in a remote location. As you move around the screen, basically you're moving on the server itself. It then sends data, not audio, back to the thick client, and the user hears it in real time, and the Braille is read in real time as well.
That's great. So that, I guess, is that hardware or software synthesizer support, or both?
You have both. So if you'd like hardware synthesizer, you can have that, or your preferred synthesizer. One of the nice things about it is that we were working with one of the government organisations, and they actually had three separate Citrix servers, and the users there could use a different synthesizer on each one, so they could immediately tell where they were. It's been very, very helpful.
Okay, we may as well move on to version 6. I know that you really don't want to talk about version 6, so let's get on to it. There's a whole raft of new features in here, and very quick turnaround considering that you only released the Citrix version. Was it in November time?
It was, October, November.
October, November, so only nearly about 6 months for a new release with lots of features. So I'll sit back and listen and butt in where appropriate.
Okay. Anybody who's familiar with Dolphin products will know the control panel that we had before and the layout that took. That's been completely redesigned. And what we've done is taken into account what we feel are the needs of the user, They're perhaps their parent, their sighted helper, their teacher or their assistant. So we've produced a very graphical interface for speech, braille and magnification. And we've also done it so that it can actually be a pop-up from the system tray in a very file menu orientated.
So you've got that kind of menu bar across the top.
Spot on, absolutely.
So that might help new users to the product as well. If they see other applications, Supernova will appear to them just like a normal Windows application, I suppose.
I think so, and it doesn't feel different to other applications, and I think it's easier to understand that way.
Does it make features easier to find? Are people, because before you had many data, if you wanted to go and find some settings for the verbosity or some advanced settings for the speech in HAL / Supernova of old, you'd have to drill down through maybe 3 or 4 layers of dialogues before you found what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, again, it's much, much easier. So from the control panel, shall I try it?
Could you give us a quick tour?
Okay, so if I take us to the file menu bar.
File menu bar.
Okay, I'm just going to move across the menu there.
Visual.
And that's the visual, which is magnification.
Speech.
Okay.
Braille.
Okay, the configuration side.
Configuration.
Okay, so could you just show us what goodies we might find in the configuration menu? And then people could get an idea of what is now located there that used to be in different places in the old layout.
Okay, I'll just open that menu.
Configuration menu, hotkeys, ... shortcut H.
So straight to the hotkeys.
Sure.
So what we can do then, if we just select that item, we'll be taken through to the hotkeys part. We can then check on what hotkeys do, a particular action, speech, visual,
sure,
whatever. Or we can change the key, or we can add to it if we prefer to as well. Extremely easy to get to. So effectively that can be 2 key presses and we're in the dial that we want to be. So
much improved. It might have been 4 or 5 before to get to that particular.
Yeah, there were some good secrets in the product, as we talked about earlier, Martin, and we think what we've tried to do is bring those to the forefront so everybody gets the benefit of them. Moving down from there, there's the window settings.
Windows settings, shortcut W.
And these are the items where we have to slightly change the PC when the screen reader is loaded and the magnification. And what we do there is we make temporary changes in the registry. We're strong believers in not changing people's registry permanent. When Supernova, HAL, Luna are unloaded, obviously those temporary changes are replaced.
Sure.
Control panel's next.
Control panel ... shortcut key.
And you can do a number of options, so it can always be on the top, it can be hidden.
Sure.
At the full display can be minimised, and we have a taskbar running which tells you your set file, and you can have that displayed or not on place. Lots of input from everybody. I'm really grateful for everybody helping us.
Shall we carry on a little tour of that top menu bar?
Shall we go back into speech, what we talked about?
Okay, why not? Let's go back to
speech. Braille menu, enable speech menu, enable selected shortcut E.
One of the things you can do in Supernova is you can select the speech to be on or off in a particular application. It's the settings file, which it takes a little bit of explaining to people that are not familiar with Dolphin products. But basically, you can set the system up so that you have a different lot of settings for each application, which automatically cut in when you move to that application.
So if someone, say, was a magnification user mainly, but they needed speech in Internet Explorer and Word, but didn't need it on the desktop, they could have the speech turned off on the other applications, but it would turn back on again when they went to Word or IE.
That's correct. And, of course, you can change the verbosity level automatically as well. These settings aren't just on this particular machine we've got, it's a standalone laptop. But if this was a network version, those could be saved back to the network. Therefore, wherever you logged in, you'd be able to get that configuration again.
So if we move back over to the right, Steve, and after the configuration item on that top menu bar, what do we come to next?
We come to the map, and map is a process. It's a set of rules which automatically cut in when we move to a particular application to make that application accessible.
So they'd be analogous to, say, a JAWS script or a Windows set file?
It's a very similar concept.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I would like to share with everybody is that we're trying to create as many maps as possible, and doing that as a free service. And many of our users use, they use so many different applications. And what we've done is taken those applications in at Dolphin, created a map, beta tested it with the users, made sure it's working correctly, how they feel they'd like to use it, and then made that available to everybody. by making sure it's on the Dolphin webpage, and then everybody can get it by clicking update from internet.
So is that a chargeable service, or if I got a new version of the latest and greatest shareware media player, could I then email support and ask them for a map file for that?
Well, what we're trying to do is, if it's readily available, it can be purchased in your local Radio Shack or PC hardware manufacturers, then what we're trying to do is make sure that we can create that for free. If it's something quite bespoke, i.e. the company databases have been written, what we've tended to do is charge for that service. Or what we prefer to do is train somebody within the organisation that can then create the map and really keep it up to date as well as buttons move around with different versions. If I move down that
map menu, application notes, shortcut N.
Those are the application notes specific in the map to that particular application. Yeah,
that's one thing that Dolphin did get criticised quite a bit for over the years, lack of help, where now you've got a hotkey to pop up these application notes, which is a great help for new users.
Yeah, I think so. So we've given that a hotkey, and of course, and again, you can move to that particular thing with just two keys by moving into the menu item as well. It is accessible. Again, obviously it reads, and of course the magnification will automatically track to that location. If I move down in there,
create or choose map file shortcut C.
What you can also do here, of course, is you may have different maps for the same application. So in Word, as I'll explain later, you can have the document object model map, or you can have the MSAA map, depending on what level of Word you're using. If I move down from there,
risk map file management shortcut M.
You can manage your maps in there.
Restore all defaults, shortcut A.
Always useful.
No, definitely, especially for technical support, I wouldn't think. I wonder.
I think they're pleased with that one. If I move down from there again,
import shortcut I.
And the really important button,
update from internet shortcut U.
So this lets you update your map files and, I believe, program update, is that right?
Yes, it is. So, as everybody knows, updates are usually bug fixes or very minor features, and also new maps that are made available. What our users do is click on that, and then they can pick those up. They're downloaded, they're asked if they want to accept them, and having done that, they're automatically brought into the software from our server.
Okay, so moving on from the map menu, what do we find?
Next, like in most products, you have find there's a help menu item. So you have the help topics, full HTML help. Then you have training mode topics, which this is the professional version, so that's why that's in there. Getting started tutorial, which people have found extremely useful. So that gets people up and going. And an introduction to Windows, again, for the new users.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next lot of new features. If you could tell us what they are, Steve.
What we've done is improved our support for Internet Explorer, Word, and Excel considerably by a new detection method.
Can we start off with Internet Explorer, because this has always been kind of controversial with Dolphin since version 5. Although the internet support was much improved, you did adopt different methods to others to traverse the web. You had different hotkeys, you had different keys to click on links to other people. Normally people use enter, you use the different key, didn't you? Can you explain the reason for that and tell us if anything's changed in that regard in this version?
Okay. Initially, what we did is we took the key set that we'd used in earlier products and then added to it what we felt was a logical step by using the keys from our hotkey set. Many users said to us that they automatically pressed enter when they wanted to select a link, and what we'd done is actually use the space bar as the select. So that was quite quickly changed, I think, in quite an early version. And what we did is the enter key then decided whether it was a link, it would select the link. If it was an edit area, it would place it into what we call interactive mode, so the user could type text in there automatically. Now, the main change that we've done here is we've moved away from MSAA in Internet Explorer as a detection method, and we've moved to something called the Document Object Model, or DOM detection.
Can you explain anything about the DOM?
The DOM is provided by our friends at Microsoft, and it supplies wonderful information regarding the attributes of the character that you're next to. It gives you lots of information based on the font, the style, the colour, you name it, it can be detected.
Sure.
The difference between it and MSAA, from Dolphin's point of view, is it didn't actually tell you where you were on the screen. So as a magnification and screen reading product, using the DOM previously, we hadn't been able to magnify that area. We'd only been able to read it out, which is why we'd used MSAA, because it gave us some of the attribute information of DOM, but it gave us X and Y axis to work with. Thanks to our friends at Microsoft, we've been able to work with DOM now so that we can now get positional information and attribute information. And that's why you'll find that the magnification and speech are combined in Internet Explorer extremely well. As before, what we've been able to do is highlight the area that we're on. A lot of teachers find it extremely useful. They want to know where their student is actually on the screen. Often you can hear something being verbose, but you don't actually know where the user is. So we've put a highlight previously there. We've put a little black marker. Now we've put lots more options in for users. So VI users can use those. They can put fill-ins, different colours. They can put boxes around them. And they're all now available to be able to place on there.
So, as well as the superior magnification for the web, does the DOM access provide any other advantages for you?
Well, it does, because we now don't need to load the whole page and detect what's actually happening on the page, which is what we did with MSAA. We only get the information for the position we're at. It means the page loads is significantly quicker.
And that's got to be good for anyone who wants to get the work done fast.
I think so, especially people who perhaps might have a slower modem. It means that you're able to get going a lot quicker and move around the page and find where you want to quicker as well. You can copy and paste if you wish. You can find the items. We call it drag, so you insert the cursor and then you move down to where you want to stop, you drop. Now what you can do is, if you wish, you can have what we call a selection virtual focus. So within the item that you've selected, you can stay in and it will lock you within there so you can detect or pick up exactly what's in there. And that can be document read and it will not move out until you tell it that you want to go outside that area.
And you can copy that to the clipboard, I guess.
No problem at all.
Okay, yeah, well, that's really definitely an improvement, because in previous versions you couldn't copy text from the internet, could you? It was a bit limited in that regard.
Sometimes it could be a little bit hit and miss there.
Okay, Steve, so what have we got next?
We have a list utility feature for customers. So now you can have Caps Lock and One will produce a list of all the links that are available. They can be sorted Z to A, A to Z, or most recently visited. And you can select the link, or you can move the virtual focus to there and then navigate around that area if you wish. That's the same for headings. Those lists can be obtained, and we can also get a list of frames. Something else that it does, of course, is you can actually, as you're moving through a table on the web, it'll actually announce that you're into the table as well. Although that's a little bit hit and miss, because many web designers use tables in what are really just text elements.
Sure. Okay, many people want to know if you support Flash yet. I believe that you've supported it for a while, am I right?
That's correct, Martin, yeah. I think it's been in for about 18 months now.
Okay. Has any of that changed in version 6, or is it?
No, all the code has been brought through. Not a lot of people seem to be using it, but those that do can find that they can, again, it's quite useful.
You mentioned Office before, so Dolphin's Office support's always been quite good, but what improvements have you managed to squeeze into Office now?
Okay, again, now we use the document object model, and again, we can find a lot more information. So we've been able to, in Word for instance, make sure that the user knows when they're in the table, they can find their header and their row information, as well as their position within the table, and the size of the table. We can find your alignment. It's only one key press. We've made it really intuitive here. Nice things here are the speed at which you'll be able to type and be able to move around, and the accuracy of the information that's coming back as well.
So that's not coming from the off-screen model, it's coming from DOM again.
Indeed.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Does that give us any new features in Word? Like, do you detect spelling mistakes or grammar errors, or are you able to work with forms and that kind of thing in Word?
Yeah, the spelling errors and the grammar checks can be obtained. It's an option where you can select if you want to in a setting file. Nice thing about that is it puts a little red wavy line underneath the misspelt word, but that doesn't need to be selected. It'll still detect that it's actually a misspelt word and announce that back to the user. Same with the grammar error.
Do you support filling in Word forms? Because sometimes you get these forms in Microsoft Word.
We do. it's difficult to get hold of all of the forms that we'd like to here because some of these remain quite confidential. But the ones that we've been given by users, we found the restricted forms are working very well. You can, most of them are operated on using the tab key, and we find that the incidental information is read out quickly and accurately again.
Have you got a document you could show us some of the office support with?
I can. I'll switch to it now, if I may. Okay.
Switch to Welcome Supernum CSUN Test, CSUN Test.
Okay, this is a test document that we used at the CSUN exhibition in LA recently. So what I'll do now is I'll just move down a little bit.
Blank capital supernova capital version 6 has all kinds of new speech features for getting the most attribute comma font.
Okay, we'll move down a couple of lines.
And font spell error capital T is normal in the test.
Okay, really there. There again, we can pick it straight up. And we've not used the red wavy line information there. If I was to press caps lock and 1.
Dolphin list utility window, 7 links in CSUN test 2004 doc. Text attributes list box 7 items.
Okay, and again, we can move through that, we can sort them in a different order, and I can move the virtual focus or I can select the link as well if I just get rid of that one.
CSUN test 2004.my.
I can also produce
Dolphin list utility window, 15 headings in CSUN test 2004. Supernova version 6 new speech features, 1 list box 15 items.
And again, same option there. We can change the order that we listen to them, and we can, of course, move the virtual focus to them. Or we can select the item as well. Now, if I move down to a table, which is further down the page, if I may, I'll just get rid of that.
CSUN test 2000 supernova cannon supernova glitched to starboard.
Okay. Move down again.
Runs page that synthesizers.
Okay.
Blank line, table. Capital Tony, capital Glenn, cell column 1, row 5.
Okay, I'll just move across one cell so people get an idea.
My capital London, cell column 2, row 5.
Now, if I was to press our number pad 3 key, it would read the heading and the row. In this case, the cell we're on is London, if you remember.
Capital address, capital Tony, capital Glenn.
Is in London. And if I want to, I can get some incidental information, and that's shift and zero.
Cell on row 5, column 2, table is 5 rows by 3 columns.
Okay. Now, so we've been able to tell when we enter the cell, we can tell the location, and we can also pick up the heading and the row from it as well.
We're getting a lot of verbosity there with capitals and commas being announced. I guess you can turn all that off, can't you?
You can, yeah. That's sort of information that you can pull and print right down. If I move the verbosity down slightly.
High, low.
So you can change the verbosity. There's a hotkey just to do that on the fly, is there?
There are. The verbosity is extremely flexible. You not only can you change the verbosity level, but you can change each control can be announced as you wish within each verbosity level as well. If I was to move back up the page a little bit, if I may.
You'll see everything in that shot was a thing that's up heading and formatting.
I'll find some text which is aligned on the page.
Whether your text is indented.
Okay. If I press shift and zero again.
First line indent 3.49 justified.
If I move down to the next line.
Pitched to capital starboard period.
Okay. If I press shift and zero again.
Right aligned.
So again, the same key is picking up the alignment information, the indent information. Again, what we're trying to do is keep that consistent across the different applications.
Are there any other new features in Word, or have we just about covered everything there? I mean, it's very impressive, it has to be said.
Oh, thank you, Martin. Yeah, I think there's lots. If I was to try and select a couple of lines, I'll just keep the left shift key down and probably press my cursor down now.
Selected 2 line, 3 line, 4 line, 5 line, 6 line, 6 line.
So that's giving people information on how many they've got. And then, of course, you can read your selection that's there as well. I could spend a couple of hours on Word alone. So
that's
think
quite an impressive. With Excel, do you read chart information? When you get like a pictorial diagram or a pictorial pie chart or bar graph coming up?
Yes, we can. But what we do is we bring it into one of our list utilities again. So it doesn't automatically verbose it when you move into the chart. What you can do is, I think it's caps lock and 1. In doing that, it will produce a list of each element and percentages in there as well.
Is there anything else you want to say about Word or Excel?
Well, just one thing about Excel, if I can, and I'll just switch to it now.
A different website, Microsoft.
Okay, the last time I was in Excel, I switched the speech off, so I'll just turn it back on. That's, of course, in the setting file, it's done that.
Voice on.
There we go. So if I move down to cell, I think it's D12.
No selection, mute map, all, tote, frequent, $0.75, continuous border, has comment, has formula, cell D12.
And again, we're picking up that the fact there's a comment in there and the fact there's a formula. And guess what? That key shift and zero.
Comment average cost.
Tells me the incidental information that's in there. So again, nice and consistent and lots of information for the users that we use.
That's great. Now we've got Word and Excel working pretty well with Office now. Do we have any plans, or do you support PowerPoint, or will you be extending the same DOM technology across to that application?
Indeed. So at the moment we use MSAA to get to PowerPoint and Access, but we're now looking, having finished version 6, quite strongly into those applications to see if we can support them with DOM as well. Be a good case for taking out a software maintenance agreement, I think.
I guess that version 6 supports Adobe Reader, but do you support Acrobat 6 now?
We've got some elements in there. I think that's something that we might enhance a little bit later in newer versions and implement some more of the DOM type stuff in there as well. So there's limited support in there at the moment. A lot of users do use our products with Adobe, but perhaps the full feature set is something that will be coming shortly.
So you don't say support secure PDF documents yet?
That would be something that's coming shortly.
Do you have any other new magnification features you could share with us?
Yeah, the magnification has been changed in what we call focus highlighting, which falls within the visual section of the control panel. Now what you can do is highlight your mouse and your cursor position. You can highlight your focus and your virtual focus completely separately with different colours and different boxes, and again using a set file differently in each application. But whilst this is really useful for magnification customers, during the beta testing process it became obvious to us that a number of users sometimes retained a peripheral vision, even what they term themselves as blind, and they found that being able to locate the cursor on the screen was extremely useful. So what we've done is include the focus highlighting element actually in HAL as well as Supernova.
Okay, so that's got to be a first, I believe, for screen readers, hasn't it?
Well, I think so. We've checked around and we can't find anybody else that's doing it. But it's nice now that you can actually locate your cursor quite quickly on the screen in a colour which suits you. There is a spin-off here, of course. Again, as I was talking about earlier, as a screen reader user, your sighted helper, assistant or a parent can actually see where you're on the screen extremely easy, whether it's the net or any other application.
And that's got to be good for schools and students as well. It's fantastic.
I think so. We do a lot of work there and I find it's going down very well.
Do you support Messenger version 6? MSN Messenger?
Yep, that's one of the maps that comes available. So again, it'll read only read the new text that appears in the top box that have been sent by your the other half, and again it'll read your text as you're typing it in the bottom pane as well. So that's an automatic map. Users that haven't got it can find that from version 5.20 they can download the map for free from the Dolphin website. Yeah, one I'd like to share with everybody, the new feature is what we call Key Describer Mode, and I'll just turn it on now. The key for it is what we call our caps lock and the forward slash.
Key Describe Mode.
That's a toggle, so that turns it on and off. Earlier we turned the speech off, and that's left control and zero, so if I do that now.
Speech on off, left control zero.
So it's announcing the key, and it's also announcing the feature. If I was to press number 7 on the number pad.
Where am I? Speak keys, numpad 7.
So you can quite quickly come to terms with the features and you can check. It's not implementing the feature here, it's just checking what the feature is.
Okay, that's great. Does that work on an individual map file level? So for example, if I've got a certain function mapped to a key in Internet Explorer, will it read that particular function or will it just say custom key press?
It will say custom key press at the moment.
So yeah, it's very good, especially good for maybe new typists as well, I suppose, who don't want to type into their application but just want to find the way around the keyboard.
I think so. Yeah. All too often, the fear I think people have is they'll press a key and something wrong will happen. And doing this, you can actually find the key quite quickly. And in doing that, be sure of the fact that you're pressing the right one when you do it.
Okay, so I believe you've now got speech support on the log-on screen.
Yeah, the speech, the user needs to use our Orpheus 2 synthesizer for this particular one, but you get speech and magnification at the login prompt now.
Okay, so great for people on networks, I guess, that have to rely on Narrator or similar technology.
Well, terrific for people at home that use XP as well, because the nice thing about XP, everybody can have a different profile in the family. So our users can hear all the prompts spoken. It makes it really easy to use.
Anything else you'd say that sets you apart?
I think we've got some, there's some amazing verbosity controls here. It really is phenomenal, the options that people have. Not only can you on the fly change it from low, medium and high, and we've heard some of the options there today, but you can actually change within each control. So if, for instance, in Cell, on the Excel, I might want it to tell me the colour automatically. Do I want to tell me it's got a border? I can change all of that within a verbosity control. There's lots of options there. More than that, you can actually create your own verbosity options and then register those to the set file again as well.
Okay, the thing that I found interesting about the verbosity is that, as well as being able to say whether a control's spoken before, after or in the middle, which is quite strange, why anyone would want to do that, I don't know, but the flexibility's there, is that you can even change the name of the control. You could even say, instead of have it called radio button, you could just have it called radio.
That's right, and I think that was a comment that came from some of our power users, that often they don't want to hear the same thing said over and over again. What they wanted to do was configure it so that they could be announced as best suited them. So what we've done is given people flexibility rather than making them choose from a list. We've also included a Daisy book. So the manual now is synthesized using our audio publishing tools, and it's a full Daisy book for the manual, the Getting Started tutorial, and of course the Introduction to Windows.
Okay, so I'd like to move on, if I could, now to just the professional version. Could you explain the difference first between standard and professional?
Yeah, I can. I think we differ here a little bit from other companies. Basically, the Dolphin installation disk looks at all of the platforms. So a standard version would install on Windows 98, ME, NT 2000, XP Home, XP Professional, and Windows Server and XP. The difference between our standard and professional, which still installs on the same platforms, is the professional can create maps which the standard version uses.
Right, so there's more configurability within the professional version on a deeper application level, so you can create maps with it, whereas in the standard one you have your set file capabilities and the ability to label graphics and simple things like that, but you wouldn't be able to create a new environment for that application. Is that?
Yeah, that's right. That's nicely summarised. Very much so that you need the professional version to create those maps.
Okay, so do people who would use Supernova to create map files and environments for applications, can they leverage any new functionality, say, from the DOM?
Yes, you can. Where the DOM is implemented in the Dolphin side, so yes, it can be used there. So you're quite right. There's a Windows detection method, an MSAA, a shape detection, and then also you can draw virtual areas. So those then can be created into objects like a button or perhaps an edit area, where normally keyboard access doesn't exist or the application author hasn't used standard window controls.
Okay, so any more new pro features or is that?
Whole new features, no. It's just making use of what's in the standard version.
Okay, you mentioned Orpheus 2. Now, Orpheus is the main synthesizer that ship with your products. So what changes can we find in this new Orpheus?
There are a number of changes. I think probably two significant ones. These are an exceptions dictionary available for the users. And there's also what we call a skim reading option as well.
Could you explain a bit about both the options?
I can. So, for instance, where acronyms have been used, let me give the one we talked about earlier, which was the CSUN exhibition, C-S-U-N. As everybody knows, that is pronounced quite differently by the synthesizer. So using the exceptions dictionary, we can actually get it to C space, S space, U space, N space. And doing that, it will be actually pronounced as C-S-U-N, or perhaps we could put in C and then S-U-N. Doing that, again, it will automatically make sure that those words are pronounced correctly. Often, some names, place names, are pronounced incorrectly by synthesizers as well, and it can be used there, for instance.
Sure.
The skimming is something I think is maybe unique. What the skimming does is, if you're familiar with the concept, which I can't do for certainly, it's just speed reading, which many sighted users do for book reading. What we've done here is we've tried to exclude initially some of the articles like the or a, and in doing that, quicken up the actual doing verbs, the verbs, and make sure the other things are actually announced, which are really more important to the sentence. So whilst the synthesizer can be turned up in speed, you can also make it more responsive for you by actually decreasing the words that it announces.
Great for people who need to do a very quick revision the morning before an exam, I would imagine. With Orpheus, you seem to have an amazing amount of languages available. How many do you have, and can you tell us what we have here? Because I don't think there are many other synths that support the amount, not software synths anyway.
No, I think we're unique in that the number of languages that we package with the box, I think, is more than any others. But I'll run through them. It's quite a list. There's actually 19. Danish, Greek, Polish, two types of Spanish, two types of English, US and UK, Swedish, Norwegian, Finnish, German, Dutch, French, Italian, Croatian, Brazilian, Portuguese and Portuguese are all supported in the product from the box.
Are you planning on supporting Chinese languages? Is that something that is out now, or?
Yeah, they're on the in the box itself at the moment, there's some development versions of Chinese and Cantonese as well, and people can have a listen to those. I have to bow to people's experience in here. We don't have a lot of experience in those languages, unfortunately, so we're hoping to get some feedback from people on them. But they are, yeah, they are actually in there.
Okay. Could we hear the US English version of Orpheus?
Dolphin Computer Access has a simple goal, : to create software products that allow visually impaired people to use mainstream information technology in its original form, period. Using the same products as sighted people means individuals can retain their independence in education, industry and leisure, period. At the same time, it allows prudent business, schools, colleges and universities to benefit from the knowledge, ideas and expertise of people who might otherwise be excluded, period.
Right. Orpheus is good for speed reading. Could we whack the speed up on that just to see how it translates? Because Orpheus is one of the few traditional synthesizers at the moment. I mean traditional by the standard synths that we've had in the past, like Eloquence and DeckTalk Axis 32.
It
hasn't relied on human voice samples to work. So could we just bump that up a bit?
We can do. What I'll do is I'll just move back to the same location.
Capital dot.
And I'll just quiet it down. I'll increase the speed. At the moment it's on.
Speed 117.
Okay, 117. And I'll move
speed
about
134. Speed 219, speed 236, speed 253, speed 270.
270.
Okay.
Here we go. Press plus.
Dolphin Computer Access has a simple goal, to create software products that allow visually impaired people to use mainstream information technology in its original form, period. Using the same products as sighted people means individuals can retain their independence in education, industry and leisure, period. At the same time, it allows prudent business, schools, colleges and universities to benefit from the knowledge, ideas and expertise of people who might otherwise be excluded, period.
Okay, so is Orpheus available as a separate package? So if I was a JAWS or Windows user, could I buy a SAPI version of Orpheus to use on the product? Because at the moment it supports a lot of languages, and also it seems to be quite good for speed reading once you're used to the voice.
Mm-hmm. It is. It should. What we're looking at at the moment, we're actually working on and making a SAPI 4 compliant as well. So hope to be able to announce something there again shortly.
So if it was made into a SAPI compliant synthesizer, there'd then be possibilities that it could be sold as a separate synthesizer to people who use other screen readers?
Yes, indeed.
Now you've shown us all these goods, Steve. I guess you'll have to sting us with a price for it. So What will upgrades cost for people?
So if I start with a HAL user, so a standard HAL user will be paying $160, obviously plus local tax and delivery. Supernova users will be paying $240. Now that includes the upgrade pack, includes the manual, is a DAISY manual, and also includes a copy of our DAISY software player Easy Reader, which is a full working version which they can use with the DAISY book, which is the manual, and also use for other DAISY content as well. If I just come down to Luna Plus, that's $120 as an upgrade, and Luna is $80.
So you're saying that there's SMAs available. Do you offer any SMAs with the product, or is that separate?
We do. As an introductory offer for Supernova Standard, for instance, what we have, the price is $1,195. I think the thing to remember here is this works on all platforms, so you'll never have to worry about if I upgrade my PC, do I need to buy something different. But that also includes, with the DAISY book and Easy Reader, it also includes a 12-month software maintenance agreement. That's free. HAL is $1,095, again a free software maintenance agreement, and that's for the pro version. The standard version is $795, again for the software maintenance.
These are still US dollars?
They are, all US dollars.
Okay. Can you just give us the price in pounds as well, just for our British listeners?
Will do. So if I start with the upgrade, so Supernova Standard is £165 UK, and the pro version is £235. HAL Standard is £120, and again those include the DAISY book and Easy Reader. If I was to go to the new price for those products, Supernova Standard is £835, and again it includes a free software maintenance agreement for 12 months. Really is good for budgeting. HAL Standard, £595. All these prices are on our website, and the Luna and the Luna Plus prices are there as well. Obviously, we sell additional licenses for the boxes at a reduced cost. And again, all of that information was there.
What is the web address for people who are interested?
We're on www, and it's DolphinUK, and that's all one word, .co.uk.
Can they download a demo at this time of version 6?
They can. It's a full version. It times for 30 minutes, and then you'll need to reboot the PC. But you can have it unlimited use for it.
Okay, so that's version 6 download available now, folks. So give it a try and feedback to Dolphin, and let everyone know what you think. Before we get onto all the exciting DAISY stuff, could you tell us a little bit about Cicero? Is Cicero is your text? Is your OCR package? Anything new on the horizon there, or anything that you'd like to bring up about Cicero?
Yeah, I mean, some people may be unfamiliar with Cicero. It's very popular in the UK and quite popular in the US. It basically gives Braille support as an OCR package. It's very competitively priced. And what we looked to do there was make it really easy to use. So on actually opening the product, all you need to do is place your document in the scanner and press F2. And then the document is read straight away, so it's really is very easy. But what we're looking to do is, it's the product is actually under review at the moment, so there may be a case that we're actually looking to increase or perhaps improve the OCR engine actually in the product.
That's great. And the other things I would say that need to be added in there are reading at the same time as you scan, and a mode which would detect two pages of a book on the scanner. But you've got to the Braille support. It could happen. I mean, deaf-blind people could find that useful, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so. We sold a number of packages to those that particular group.
Well, the big two, OpenBook and Kurzweil, I don't believe they support refreshable Braille yet, so that kind of makes you an interesting alternative. Got to ask about this. I've had a couple of people ask me, any more development on Cypher, the Braille translator, or is that staying as it is for a while now?
There's nothing planned in the short term for that.
So I'd like to turn your attention now, if I may, to other aspects of Dolphin. You mentioned Dolphin's audio publishing business that works out of Sweden, and the fact that you offer a DAISY player at the moment with new and upgraded copies of Supernova, HAL, Luna and Luna Plus. Could you tell us a bit about this development and what this company were and how it all fits into the Dolphin scheme of things?
Okay, so originally the company in Sweden is based in a small town called Falköping between Gothenburg and Stockholm. Some really good developers there who are extremely experienced in the DAISY book area. They company was called Labyrinthine, and they were bought into the Dolphin Computer Access Group. I think it was about 4 to 5 years ago. They've brought a wealth of experience in this area. Previously, they've been doing some work for the DAISY Consortium to write authoring tools for them. But what we've done now is released this week is a version which not only creates audio-only books, but also can create synchronized text and speech DAISY books.
What's this product called?
Easy Publisher. Easy Publisher is designed to work with Windows 2000, XP Home and XP Professional. And it really is, it's an easy, wizard-driven way to create DAISY books.
I've got to ask this because it seems to be the one thing that Freedom Scientific haven't yet tried to grab up. Why did Dolphin see the purchasing of a DAISY company as a kind of strategic move to get into another market?
Well, I think there's one thing about DAISY that shines through is whilst it was originally thought of perhaps to make sure that the cassette content was traded over into an electronic or digital format, it really has common sense built right into it. And what we've found is that everybody can use that content, not just the visually impaired child, but really the print disabled community can be involved with it. One source of content, but it can actually be rendered differently for each user.
So do you see the DAISY kind of aspect of Dolphin becoming as large a part as the screen reader magnification section sometime in the future?
Well, certainly do. And in actual fact, if you look at the marketplace, it's probably a much larger marketplace in print disabled than there is in access software. So I'm extremely hopeful there. Again, it's that common sense, I think, that will come through as more and more people adopt the DAISY standard to create access to that content.
So what products do you offer on the DAISY side?
Well, as we quickly discussed, Easy Publisher is the authoring tool, so that creates DAISY books. So you can have an audio-only, a text-only, or a synchronized text and speech book. There are other versions available, but those are the three which are most prominent. Now, that book can then play in either a hardware player, but we've created a software player which we call Easy Reader. And that'll play any 2.02 or DAISY 2 books that have been created. So Easy Publisher, the authoring tool, Easy Reader, the player. Well, I think the main thing to do is it might be worth everybody looking at the website again. If you go to the www.dolphinuk.co.uk, you find there is on the main page, you can go through to our audio section or you can go through to access. There's lots of information in there on what's available. And it'd be nice if people had a look at perhaps getting hold of one of our demo versions of Easy Reader. You can see the flexibility that there is in a DAISY book. Synchronized text and speech books have real options for people to be able to search effectively an audio stream. If you're looking for a particular word in a reference book, it can be really narrowed down within sort of 4 or 5 key presses. And then placed a bookmark in there so that it can be pinpointed again, accurately again, next time you need to look at it. All of that information, like book position where you left it, your bookmarks, are all retained within your PC. And the network version, obviously, they're retained on the network. Real, what I would call empowerment.
Okay, I've got to ask you about this, Steve, because a lot of users in the UK have grown to become au fait with this service. Dolphin provide an ISP, which was launched probably about 3 years ago now. Does that ISP still exist, and can people still sign up to it if they wanted to?
The ISP certainly does exist. At the moment, we're between ISP providers, I have to say. The user that we originally signed up with went into liquidation and a new company took it over. So we haven't actually signed up with them to make sure that we're going to continue it in the future. One of our priorities here is we made sure that there was an accessible installation procedure for the ISP, and that was of highest priority to us.
At the time, I think 3-4 years ago, XP wasn't around and that the Easy network setup and the Easy ISP setup wasn't available, so it was probably a good move at the time in some ways.
Yeah, we thought so. We had lots of users who signed up to it. And of course, they got excellent access because the ISP guaranteed us their own server. So it was very fast access indeed.
But maybe it took a little bit away from Dolphin's other activities?
I think that is a comment that could be made. At the time, we were trying to do the best for our users. With hindsight, perhaps might do it slightly differently in the future, but a good experiment, and anybody's using at the moment, I have to say they're extremely satisfied with the service they get.
In a Dolphin newsletter that came out just after Christmas, brief mention was made of a new guy you've got working on your staff, and I've forgotten his name now, which is bad journalistic etiquette on my part, but I believe he's working on Windows C or small factor Windows. Can you tell us anything about that, or is that a bit quiet at the moment? Hush, hush.
I hope the users will, the listeners will understand is that I'm afraid I can't comment on that at the moment.
Okay, I had to have a shot because it was in a public newsletter, so people were interested.
I understand, Martin.
Okay, Steve, so are there any other things that Dolphin are up to at the moment that you'd like to tell us about, or anything new in the offing that you can tell us?
Well, I think we've covered nearly everything today. Obviously, we're going to continue to enhance our version 6 products, and those will be grown in the future. So magnification, speech, and the Braille, most importantly Supernova, which of course is very popular with our users.
I've got to ask you this one about Supernova. Will we get more Java support in there? It's been started already, so the building blocks are visible to the end user. Is that planned? Would that be something that could happen in the future?
Well, I think if you look into the future, it seems to be that Java is being more and more used by, in particular, companies in the employment area. So it's a strong possibility we'll be looking over there.
Okay, well, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming to Preston to do this interview. It's greatly appreciated.
You're welcome.
And good luck with the version 6 launch.
Thank you very much.
Very many thanks to Steve Bennett of Dolphin Computer Access and Martin Roberts for providing us with that interview. If you'd like to contact Dolphin, you can do so by visiting their website at allthews.dolphinuk.co.uk. That's allthews.dolphinuk.co.uk. Or in North America at allthews.dolphinusa.com. That's dolphinusa.com. And finally, you can contact Martin about any aspect of the interview by writing to Martin at mproberts.co.uk. That's Martin at mproberts.co.uk. When you're considering producing a review for Main Menu, it always pays to drop us a line just to check that somebody else in some other part of the world isn't doing exactly the same as you. This is sort of what happened with GMA Tank Commander. A few weeks ago on the programme, we heard Kelly Sapurge's excellent demonstration of the GMA Games product, and we also received a demonstration from Stephen Clower. After much consideration and lengthy deliberations, we decided we'd let you hear both reviews. You've already heard Kelly. Here's Stephen.
Hello, Main Menu listeners. This is Stephen Clower coming to you from Denton, Texas. And today, I'm going to be reviewing a new game put out by GMA Games called GMA Tank Commander. Tank Commander is a tank commanding simulation in which you take a technologically superior tank to that of your enemy across 6 very difficult levels of enemy territory. At the end of the game, you are picked up by a tank transport, presumably for a new mission. Those familiar with other GMA games, especially Shades of Doom, should feel right at home with this game since it uses the same game engine for its interface. Like Shades of Doom, this game is completely three-dimensional, and if you have a set of quadraphonic speakers, the game will take advantage of that. However, if you don't, stereo headphones will suffice. For those who aren't necessarily militarily inclined, I still think they would enjoy this game. I myself am not terribly militaristically inclined, and I enjoyed the game immensely. In fact, I downloaded the demo, and 20 minutes afterwards, I purchased the game. If you're not familiar with military terms, especially for ammunition, navigation, etc., I recommend reading the manual first. Even if you are, the manual kind of gives you basic grounds for what's going on in the game. I made the mistake of just sort of jumping right in and promptly got blown up. The game, however, is not that difficult to play. It just takes some getting used to. Since this game's in stereo, I recommend wearing a good set of headphones so that you can hear everything most accurately. Because of the Main Menu format, I can only present this review to you in mono. However, at the end, I will give you the address for my website where you can download this review in stereo. So with that, let's get started with the game. I've already unloaded my screen reader, and I will immediately start the game. So I'm arrowing to my GMA program group. I hit right arrow to enter the submenu, and I will hit enter. In just a moment, we will hear the introduction sound. Nice and suspenseful. But it's kind of long, so we're going to hit control to skip over that.
GMA Tank Commander!
Written by David Greenwood.
Sounds by Phil Vlasak.
Version 1.0. Enter your selection. Play standard game.
Alright, and just as a small side note, you can actually skip over that version message by hitting control also. Now we're in your standard sort of game menu, which gives you quite a number of options. Now the first one is play standard game. This means that you can save your game at any point, but you only have one shot to complete a mission. For instance, if you get blown up, or if you get stuck somewhere like in a river, or you go off a cliff, then you're dead and you'll have to start over from the very beginning of the game. I'm going to hit down arrow to get to the next option.
Play arcade mode.
This next option, arcade mode, is slightly different. You're actually given three chances to complete your mission. However, you cannot save your game. So if you manage to get in a situation which would normally have you start from the beginning of the game again, what will happen is your enemy tanks will stop if there's any nearby, and you'll be given the opportunity to move out of the area and commence repairs on your tank. However, each time this happens, you lose a life. So if you do that three times, then you're sunk. I'm going to hit down arrow again to get to the next game option.
Play saved game.
Play saved game will just ask you for a save slot, and if you've saved a game, then you can load it and resume from there.
Review game sounds.
Review game sounds. This is something that's a very good idea to do, because otherwise you're not going to know what some things are, and I'm trying to guess what sounds mean in a crunch will probably hinder your efficiency in the game. So we're going to do that now. I'm going to hit enter to get into this menu.
Sound index. Target acquisition system active.
All right, your target acquisition system is something you can have either on or off. I usually keep it on because it lets you know when there are new targets available, and it helps you line up both direction-wise and with the gun turret on your tank so you can fire at your enemies. The demo sound you just heard is loud, but if the targeting system is just on, it'll beep quietly, but audibly enough so that you are aware that it's active and working.
Approaching correct direction.
Alright, the approaching correct direction sound is what you hear when a target's in range, and that's selected on your acquisition system. The higher the pitch of this sound, the closer you are to getting to the right direction. And you just use left and right to get to that direction.
Approaching correct range.
Alright, once you're facing the right direction, you're going to hear that sound, which means you need to adjust the range on your gun turret. You can do this with home and end, and once you're there, you'll hear a confirmation beeping sound, which means you can fire because you're in the correct range. I'm going to hit down again.
Target selection system active.
Okay, this sound you hear when there are multiple targets in range. And if you wish, you can have your targeting system go through one by one and target different ones so you won't be distracted. For instance, if you have a tank that's 900 feet away, directly ahead, and you have missiles that you can pick up that are, say, 50 feet to the right, you can tell your targeting system to home in on the missiles first, and then you can once you pick those up, if the tank was the only target left, then it'll automatically revert back to that, and then you can take care of the other tank. I'm going to hit down again to the next option.
Full targeting solution.
Full targeting solution. This is the beeping sound that you hear when you're lined up with your target, i.e. you're facing the right direction and your gun turret is set at the proper range so you can shoot at your target.
New target available alert.
Radar contact.
Okay, new target available. That just happens when a new target comes into range that you can do something about.
Turn approaching.
Turn approaching. In the second level, you actually are in a town where you need to know where there's turns because there are a lot of cross streets and intersections. For instance, this sound came out of one side of my headphones, so if I were driving along in this town and I heard that coming out of, say, the left side of my headphones, then I would know there's a turn coming up to my left. For level 2, this is very helpful, and I find it makes navigating the town much easier. I don't have to use the scanning commands, which I'll get to in a moment. Okay, that turn approaching is the last sound that you hear, because if you hit down arrow, then you'll get a nice little beep. One thing I wish had been done was that you could hear the different sounds of the various tanks, because each tank has its own properties. Some can shoot missiles, some have better sights, and this can spot you from greater range. It would help to know what's what before you start playing the game. But maybe in future releases these will be added. But as of now they're not, so you just kind of have to learn as you play. So to get back to the main menu, I'm going to hit escape.
Enter your selection. Review game sounds.
Alright, now I'm going to hit down again.
Exit game.
And exit game is the final thing we have. So, now that we've kind of reviewed the game sounds and exited the game, what do you say we go up? I'm going to hit home.
Play standard game.
And let's start a standard game. I'm going to hit enter.
Enter your experience level.
Bring them on!
Alright, there's 5 experience levels that you have in this game. The easiest being...
It's my turn, Daddy!
Next, the easiest being...
Don't hurt me!
The normal one, which is selected by default...
Bring him on!
Bring him on. The more difficult one...
So, you thought you've had it bad so far.
And finally, the most difficult and pretty much impossible level to play...
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to die. For the sake of this review, we're gonna go...
It's my turn, Daddy!
With the easiest level. And I'm gonna hit enter.
Would you like training mode? No.
Training mode makes it so that in the first level of the game, your enemies won't move. They can still shoot at you, but since they can't move, you can easily get out of range if you need to. This mode is definitely recommended for beginners so that you can learn how to drive your tank. However, I find this one kind of limiting once you're sort of used to the game, so we're going to select no, which is the default, so I'm going to hit enter for that. And we will then start the game. We'll be given the orders for our first mission that we need to complete. And hopefully this will translate well over the main menu review.
Press F1 for help.
Sector 1.
Attention TC-17.
This is TC-17.
Go north of the beach and destroy all intelligence bases before moving into the town. Access across the river is provided by a bridge in the northeastern corner of the sector. But be careful, the bridge is well guarded.
We're on the beach!
Alright, we're on the beach. You can hear rain right now. There's some basic navigation commands which I need to go over real quick. First, let's see what we have in front of us. I'll hit the S key.
Tank trap 800 meters. Wooded area 800 meters.
Each time you heard that beeping sound, it was placed in the panning position of the object which was being described. For instance, the tank trap sound came ahead of me, and the wooded area announcement beep came slightly to my right. Now, here's a tank coming, so I'm going to pause with the P key so I can explain a little more. If you want to examine everything around you in a 360-degree radius, you can hit X. X will stop the game and let you go through items in a menu. and depending on if it's in front or behind you, you'll hear a different kind of tone. For instance,
tank trap ahead, 800.
Okay, tank traps ahead, 800 meters. And you heard a high-pitched sound.
KF-1 ahead, 919.
That's the kind of tank that's coming towards us, is a KF-1. I'll hit down again.
Wooded area to the right, 800.
Okay, that, likewise, the beeping came further to the right.
Water behind, 100.
Okay, the water sound came from about the same position as the sound for the KF-1. You heard the beeping this time was lower pitched. It was basically half the speed as the normal beeping sound. That sound indicates that something's behind you, and the game will also tell you if it's behind or not. Okay, I hit down again, and I just got that same beep, which means that's it. That's all the scanner can see, and that's all that's really relevant right now. So I'll hit escape to get out of this menu. Now, you're given 6 types of weaponry. Each obviously have varying degrees of effectiveness, and you have varying amounts of each.
Missiles.
Okay, I hit 1. Missiles. Missiles are good for shooting down helicopters or other missile-equipped tanks. However, you want to be careful using these things in close quarters because the detonation could very well kill you, which I've done before. Now, see how much of an item you have, you can hit the A key. I'm not sure why they chose A, but it's all right.
3.
Okay, so you're only given 3 missiles initially, so you want to use these definitely very sparingly. If you can avoid using them, I would recommend it. However, with a helicopter, for instance, there is a helicopter in this level, you got to shoot it down with a missile. You can try doing it with a machine gun, which I'll get to in a minute, but the likelihood of success is very little. Hitting number 2... on the numeral.
Standard shells.
Standard shells. This is what is selected by default. And this is usually what you'll want to use because these load the quickest and you're given the most of them. For instance, hitting A tells us that we have
100
shells. The standard shells are good for firing at things such as the intelligence bases or other tanks. And they load the quickest, so they're still very effective. Firing at things in the air, however, is not recommended because you're most likely to miss. The number 3.
Missile interceptors.
Missile interceptors. If a missile is being fired at you, you'll hear a nice little incoming warning. If you have a missile interceptor, you can then change to that and then orient in the direction of the missile and fire. When this happens, the missile will detonate harmlessly in midair and you'll be okay. If you're out of missile interceptors, though, you can still try and outrun the missile because it won't always get you. However, you really need to know how to drive your tank and how to maneuver to do this semi-effectively. I usually just like to shoot the missile interceptors and get it over with. Number 4.
Machine gun.
The machine gun is useful when you need to fire at enemies hiding in the woods, like actual men armed with missile launchers, which you'll come to in later levels, firing at trucks, or as I said earlier, you can try and shoot the helicopter down with it. I haven't really had much luck with it. I've scored on it, but the helicopter never got shot down, so it's just best to use a missile for a quick, clean shot for the helicopter. Number 5.
Armor-piercing shells.
Armor-piercing shells. You're not given very many of these.
10.
You're only given 10, but they're good for firing at things that are very heavily armored. They're good at shooting at some of the tanks. It's good to shoot them, especially at very heavily armored bunkers, because bunkers take quite a bit to destroy, and usually they've packed quite a punch, so you want to get rid of them as soon as you can. And finally, number 6,
cruise missiles.
Cruise missiles are especially useful for long-range targets. However, you're only given 1 per level. So if you can avoid using a cruise missile, I would strongly recommend doing so, because in level 6, which is the last one, you're going to need all the ammunition that you can get. Now, if you don't use a cruise missile on 1 level, then you'll just be given an extra. So for instance, right now, you just have
1.
But if you don't use it, then level 2, you'll have 2 available at your disposal. but I don't really want to waste a cruise missile on a tank, so I'm going to go back to our standard shell.
Standard shells.
And I'm going to hit P to unpause, and we will hear the tank coming towards us, and we'll try and shoot it down. Once you hear the targeting system active, I'm going to turn my tank to the right direction, maybe move forward if necessary. Then I'm going to use home and in to move my gun turret to the proper range of the tank so I can fire. I'm explaining this right now because there are some times where it's just easier to do it first and then explain what happened later, or explain first what I'm going to do. So I'm going to hit P, and you can hear as I go and try and destroy this tank. Okay, I'm turning towards
F1. Two, two, three, three, four, four, five, five, six, six, seven, seven, 800.
Right on target.
800.
Oh, they're firing at me. Ah, good. Okay, they just fired twice at me and missed.
North.
And as a crew, my tank just told me the enemy armor was neutralized, so that's very good.
Quarter speed.
I just hit up, which started my tank going north at quarter speed. Okay, I hear an intelligence base coming up. Actually, I hear two of them. Great. And I hear another tank off in the distance.
Intelligence neutral.
Okay, I hit down to stop my tank because the intelligence base isn't going anywhere, so
850.
Now I can fire away and not have to worry about it. So here we go. I'm going to hit space to fire. Okay, that base is destroyed. Now there's another base off to my left. Oh, and there's a helicopter coming too. Hooray. Let's head for this base first.
Quarter speed. Helicopter. Neutral.
Okay, helicopter. I'm going to fire it with space. Here we go. And you can hear the helicopter exploding in the distance. So now we're going to go back to our standard shells.
Standard shells.
And I'm going to move again towards this next intelligence base.
Intelligence base neutral.
Okay, there's the intelligence base, so I'm going to orient. Oh, cool. I'm right with it. So here we go. All right. They're down. I can hear another tank off to my right.
North.
And I hit control right to turn my tank directly north. So I'm going to hit up arrow again to start moving.
Quarter speed.
Oh, there's another one coming on my right.
KJ-1, neutral.
Okay, firing.
Got him! Try it again! Try it again. Right on target.
That guy just didn't want to die.
Destroyed.
Finally. And you can hear the rain just stop. That's just a random event. It won't really affect anything.
West.
Whoops, I turned too far.
North.
Okay. Now, you heard we got hit during that fight, so I'm going to hit R to see what the status of repairs is.
Just minimal damage.
Okay, just minimal damage. That's acceptable.
Quarter speed.
So I hit up, and we're going forward again.
Burning tank, 675 meters.
Okay, I hit tab just then to tell me exactly what was directly ahead. In fact, let's hit S just to see what's in front of us.
Cliffs, 1,000 meters.
burning tank 583 meters.
Okay, there are cliffs far to my left. It hasn't picked up this other tank yet on my right, but I'm sure it will momentarily.
KB neutral.
Okay, there it is. Let's just fire a couple rounds just to make sure.
Incoming.
Right on target.
Intercept.
Target destroyed.
Okay, you heard they fired a missile at me, so I hit number 3 to go to my missile interceptors. And I hit space to shoot. Since I was already facing the right direction, I could just fire away, and it destroyed the missile without affecting me.
East.
Now I need to head northeast, so I've gone a good ways north, so we're gonna head east now. I've already turned east. Hitting F tells us.
East.
And here we go. I hear a tank coming to my left.
Quarter speed.
So, here we go.
Standard shells.
Okay, so far there's nothing showing up ahead of me, so...
Half speed.
We'll go to half speed.
Quarter speed. Right. Neutral. Quarter speed.
Our next intelligence base is right up here. So I turned a little to the left because that's where the sound came from. Just make sure I'm oriented properly. I can still hear the tank.
Intelligence base neutral.
Oops. Well, I just wasted a shell. Oh well. Alright.
North.
Okay, there are two tanks I can hear. There's one on my left and one pretty much directly ahead, so we're gonna take care of this one first.
Quarter speed.
This could be a tough situation, so I'll just let you hear as I go. I'm turning a little. The tank was moving a little bit. Oh boy, we got a third tank.
Neutral. 800. Quarter speed.
Okay, now they moved out of range, so I can't shoot at him.
Got him! Try it again!
Taking damage! 800.
Good shooting.
700.
Enemy armor neutralized.
Artillery. Alright. This has to go.
Grab that gun.
Proceed one.
Target destroyed.
7, 6, 8, 9, 8, 10, 10.
Incoming!
Right on target.
Interceptor. Standard shell. 8.
Incoming!
Right on target.
Standard shell. 7, 7, 6, 10.
Incoming! Good one. Enemy armor neutralized.
North River, 600 meters. Neutral.
Okay, we moved quite a bit. So now, I destroyed all three of those tanks. Facing north, the river is 600 meters ahead of me. If you recall, we got to get over to a bridge. So, it's in the northeastern part of this sector, so I need to go east.
East.
Let's see what's directly ahead with tab. Okay, nothing, so...
Quarter speed.
Now we want to watch out for the bridge. Oh, geez, now there's another tank coming to my left, so we'll have to take care of that. When you get close to the bridge, you got to be careful because it is possible to destroy the bridge, and if you do that, then you're sunk. Excuse the pun.
Wood Reported area, 750 meters.
Okay, I hit tab, so we know the woods are 750 meters ahead. I'm going to hit S just to see what's around real quick.
River, 600 meters. Bridge abutment, 550 meters. Bridge, 600 meters. Bridge abutment, 700 meters. River, 900 meters. Wooded area, 750 meters. KF2, 702 meters. Wooded area, 650 meters.
Okay. That KF2 tank is very close to that bridge, and I bet if I fire at it and destroy it, that'll probably knock out the bridge. So what we're going to do is move east and see if I can get that tank to get away from the bridge so that I can safely destroy it. Because otherwise there's really no chance of crossing that bridge.
Neutral KF2.
Alright, here we go. It spotted me and it shot at me.
South.
So I'm going south, see if I can get it. Come on.
Quarter speed. Go forward.
Okay, I'm going full speed. See if I can get it away.
Three half quarter speed neutral.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know. I'm going to hit R.
Just minimal damage.
Okay. It moved. Here we go. Okay, we don't need it doing that. So
standard
let's take
shells.
Care of this.
700, 600 and...
We're going to missile it out.
The tank is down.
Standard shells.
Gone. Okay.
Quarter speed.
So now we're heading north again. I'm going to hit tab to see if there's anything else in front of us.
Burning tank, 637 meters. Half speed.
Now as we come up to this burning tank, I'm going to turn a little to the right to avoid hitting it.
Wooded area, 350 meters.
Okay, I'm going to hit F to see exactly where I'm facing right now.
North.
Okay, so I'm kind of... It said north, but it was a little to my left, which means I'm facing kind of northeast.
Entering the woods.
Okay, you can hear now. I'm in the woods. I'm going to turn north.
North.
And by the way,
neutral.
If you want, you can stay right here and wait until your tank is fully repaired if your enemies are destroyed. In fact, let's hit R to see how our tank's doing.
Just minimal damage.
All right, we're still at just minimal damage, and that's not terribly bad. So we can go ahead and go forward.
River, 500 meters in wooded area.
Okay, so I know the river is 500 meters ahead because I hit tab.
Quarter speed.
So let's get out of the woods here. Okay, as we get close to the river, I can hear it on my right.
Slow reverse. Neutral.
Okay. We don't want to enter the river. We're 100 meters away from the river, so that warning lets you know that if you keep going, you're going to enter, for instance, the river. And this is something you do not want to do. You will get stuck, and your game will be over. Now let's say, for instance, I've made it this far and I want to save my game. I'm going to hit F3.
Save game. Yes.
Yes, I do want to, so I'll hit enter.
Select slot 1.
Okay, I actually have another game already saved in slot 1, which I don't want to overwrite, so I'll hit the number 2.
2. Save.
And it's saved, so if I hit it, if I really screw up, I can go and start again from here later. Now I'm going to hit S, because we need to find the bridge to leave the sector.
Bridge abutment, 200 meters. River, 100 meters.
Okay. The bridge abutment was, it said 200 meters. That was off to my left. So we need to turn west.
West.
And go straight.
Bridge abutment, 200 meters. Quarter speed.
You want to go very slowly at this part, because this is not the bridge. If you hit it, then you might...
Collision warning.
Neutral.
Okay, you heard the collision warning. You hear a collision warning if you're going to hit something and you're within 50 meters of hitting it. So that gives you a little time to stop. That's one of the reasons you want to keep going at a slower speed. Because the faster you go, the harder it's going to be to stop. So, now that we're near the bridge, let's see if we can find it with S.
Bridge abutment, 50 meters. River, 100 meters.
Okay, we still can't get exactly on it. So I turned a little to the left.
West.
I'm facing a little
quarter speed
south of west. We're going to see if we can move past the abutment and then find the bridge. Okay, I just turned...
Wooded area, 450 meters. River, 450 meters. Bridge abutment, 150 meters. Bridge 1.
Okay, the bridge is over there, so we're going to go north.
West. North. Bridge 150 meters.
Great. Okay. I hit tab. It says the bridge is 150 meters north.
Quarter speed.
We're going to go. And with luck, we'll be out of the sector. Okay. We're going north along the bridge. You can hear the tank moving along.
The bridge is destroyed.
Sector 2.
Attention, TC-17.
This is TC-17.
Good job, 17. You can leave the town via the road to the north, but first, destroy all of the enemy's ammo trucks. Remember that they use a standard shell as well, so if you need to, restock before you destroy them.
Okay, we're still moving.
Second Avenue.
Okay, I can turn directly to my left because I heard the intersection
west
turn sound that I told you about earlier. And now I'm going to stop right here.
Neutral.
Because I don't want to give this whole game away. But we're now in a town, so we've successfully completed our first mission. So, for instance, if I wanted to save right here, I'll do that right now with F3.
Save game. Yes. Select slot 1.
We'll do slot 2 again.
2.
Save.
And then we can quit. I'm going to hit escape.
Are you sure you would like to quit? Yes.
Yes, I'm sure.
Enter your selection. Play arcade mode.
And I'm not exactly sure why it brought me down to that one. I think this is a bug in the game. But that's basic part of GMA Tank Commander, so I'm going to hit end.
Exit game.
And then hit enter to exit the game. Now note for the demo version, when you do that, you'll hear an announcement giving contact information for GMA Games so that if you want to, you can buy the game. I've got a few comments I'd like to make about the game. One, I think the sound design was excellently done. I was very impressed when I heard it. There are a couple issues. I don't know if this is DirectX related because this uses DirectX 7, but I have a copy of this game on my laptop, and there are some instances where the sounds don't play correctly, especially if the scanning sounds don't pan properly, so it can sometimes take quite a bit of guesswork, but like I said, that may be a DirectX issue, and if that's the case, then there's not too much GMA can do about it. The game doesn't seem to take up too many system resources. For instance, this laptop is only 750 megahertz, and the game plays flawlessly on there. One thing I would like in future releases is for the mission sounds to be equalized a little bit. The high-end signals have been turned up quite a bit, I guess to make that radio sort of effect, which is nice, but I don't know if you could hear this on the mono version of this review, but the highs were very accentuated and aren't very pleasant to listen to. In fact, whenever it gets to those missions, I need to move my headphones away from my ears because it's loud. But overall, I would say this game is worth the $35 it costs to register, and if you're into accessible games, or if this is your first accessible gaming experience, I think it'll be an enjoyable one. So if you want to buy this game, you can go to www.gmagames.com and then click the GMA Tank Commander link and then click Order Now. The way the registration system works is that your registration key is created with your name and a computer ID. So you can't share the same code among other computers. This is done mainly to prevent piracy of the game, which is fine because once you register it, if you need another key, just email GMA Games with your name and your computer ID, and they'll send you another key. The system's not automated, so depending on the time of the day or time of the week, it may take up to a day or a day and a half for them to get back with you. Overall, I'd say this game's worth it. It's very well done, and I'd just like to congratulate GMA Games for making such a very good game. If you have any comments, you can email me at steve@steve-audio.net. If you want to hear this review in stereo quality, you can go to my website at www.steve-audio.net and click on the GMA Tank Commander review link. This has been Stephen Clower for Main Menu, and thanks for listening.
Finally this week on Main Menu, director from CSUN 2004, Marlena Lieberg, speaks with Quantum Technology.
In the room here, I have Tim Connell from Quantum Technologies.
That's correct. Right? Hi, Marlena.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And you came to us all the way from...
Sydney, Australia.
Yes, yes. And Lee, you're going to have to say your last name for me.
Kumatet. Hi, Marlena.
Hi, Lee. And you came along as well from Sydney.
Sure did.
I wanted to give Tim a bit of an opportunity to talk about quantum. And we know some of the quantum products here in the States, but we may not really know much about quantum, and certainly many of us know the Mountbatten. And so I thought I'd give you an opportunity, Tim, to talk a little bit about what quantum is, what it does, and how people can contact you if they like. And then I'd like to lead right into the Jada Dot, which I saw last night, and I think it will be a raging success when it comes to the market, and maybe have Lee, as a Braille user, talk a bit about the Jada Dot.
Excellent. Okay, well, Quantum's an Australian company, obviously. We started life in the early to mid-80s, and we started out making a product that is still around today and still used in countless number of countries called the Braille and Print. And that's a device that sits underneath the Perkins and translates information that you type in Braille into text. So that probably takes the award for longevity in this field, I think.
Yes, I remember the first time I ever saw one of those.
Yeah, well, they're still in use, and certainly now more so in developing countries where they're moving on from the Perkins. We've developed a whole range of products over the years, including the SpeakWriter, which was the first talking typewriter. We've made the QCalc, a talking scientific calculator, and of course the Mountbatten Brailler, and that started actually in 1989.
Although at this point in the week, Tim, it does feel like it was 1899, doesn't it?
I'm feeling a little old, yes.
I understand, yes.
And the Mountbatten was actually a competition that was originated in England at the Royal National College for the Blind to see who could commercialise a concept that they had developed for a new electronic braille writing device. And it took us a number of years, but the Mountbatten's been on the market now for over 12 years, and we've sold many thousands of them, and they're in use in 33 countries around the world, so it's certainly made its mark.
How did the Mountbatten get its name?
The Mountbatten got its name because the funding for the early stage development came from the Mountbatten family, and it was in honour of Lord Mountbatten, Lord Louis Mountbatten, who died tragically in the mid-80s from a terrorist bomb in Northern Ireland. And his family wanted to honour his name by contributing money to a project that would assist blind people around the world, and he was very active in blindness organisations and had a role in establishing the blindness organisation in India. So it was a fitting tribute to his name.
And there are two types of Mountbattens.
There are actually three types of Mountbatten.
There are three types
three of Mountbatten. Three types of Mountbatten. There's the writer, and there's the writer plus, and there's the pro. And predominantly it's the pro version that we sell now, and that has speech in it and braille translation and an LCD display and a whole range of options. And they're primarily used in early education as the first braille writing tool for young children.
Yes, it is a fabulous teaching aid. And for listeners who haven't used it, if you press, let's say, the letter B, this lovely, cheerful man who lives inside the Mountbatten says, B! And you know without a shadow of a doubt that you've pressed the letter B.
It's a multimedia braille. Yeah, you've got tactile and spoken braille.
Yeah.
And that's led us up to the Jotadot.
The Jotadot, and we're all about to burst into song here. We started singing at the Jotadot party last night about Jotadot, but I'll refrain and ask Lee to talk about, what is the Jotadot?
The Jotadot is a mechanical braille writer, essentially. So it's designed to be a step up from the slate and stylus. I'm sure many listeners will know the slate and stylus, where you have to write from right to left on the page and write in reverse, and then open your slate and stylus and turn it over and read it. And many people have been using slate and stylus for years and years, and there are some amazingly proficient slate and stylus users. Do you use a slate and stylus?
I do.
I never mastered it really well, unfortunately. But so we thought, you know, we need as braille readers and users should have choice. So the Jotadot was designed. How long have we been? It's a long project that we've been working on.
We do call it the overnight success, and it was in 1989 that we first started throwing these ideas around, and in 1992 that we had our first prototype. So it's a very long project.
It's a very long project, and it's really exciting that it's, you know, come to fruition. So we have six key entry. So I've got my Jotadot here, and I've got my hands on the six keys, and it's hanging around my neck on a neck strap. And the action is to select the dot and then to close it and push the, I guess, punch a dot into the paper.
And I'm going to move my microphone over toward you, so why don't you make some dots?
Okay, I'll make some dots. Here we go. Okay, and that's the sound of the Jotadot as it's hanging around my neck.
So it's not an intrusive sound?
No, it's not an intrusive sound. It's very much like using a hole punch is the action for it. Obviously, if you put it on a desk or a table, you are going to get a little bit more noise. But there are a number of ways that you can use it. You can use it, as I say, with a neck strap. You can use it resting flat on a table, or you can use it actually kind of sitting up on a table on its edge and using it as a squeezing action as well. So it's a little difficult to describe what the Jotadot looks like, but it is essentially, it has six keys at the front. Behind those six keys you have a little ruler that you can feel, so you know which cell you're on, and that has 20 cells marked across it. It's basically designed to write on note paper, so regular note paper. We're talking Imperial here this week in the US, so index size cards of, I think it's 6x4 inch. Mm-hmm. Cards or anything that's longer. Basically, the width is the important thing. You can't have anything wider than that, but you can have anything longer than that. So you can write forever if you like.
One way that I described it to someone this morning, and you can tell me if I'm accurate, and if I am, it may help listeners get a picture of it in addition to what you've said. I was talking about it this morning because I think it is a very cool thing. And I said, if you imagine a paper punch, a three-hole paper punch, mm-hmm. and you sort of cut the thing down by about a third of its width, left to right, and you put on the top of the paper punch where you would normally press down with your palms, you put 6 Braille entry keys, and you sort of round the top out a bit. You've got the basics of a Jotadot. Do you
definitely think that's? I think that's quite a good description and a very good analogy. We've talked about how we actually write with it, but we haven't really talked about how you read.
Yes, right? How do you read with it?
Okay, so if I write with my Jotadot, what I do is I actually turn the Jotadot, so essentially it's on, the keys are facing downward, so it's upside down. And inside, I can put my fingers and there's a little window where I can feel the paper, and that's where you read. You do have to roll it down. There's a little wheel which you use to feed the paper in and out, and you roll it down and there will be your line of Braille. And remember I mentioned the scale bar across the top. There's also one down on the bottom of the Jotadot where you read, so you can check that you are at the right cell before you resume writing again.
Now, who would use the Jotadot?
We think lots and lots of people would use Jotadot. We envisage children in schools using Jotadot because slate and stylus is sort of, I guess, not being taught so much anymore. Kids in schools need to learn so much that slate and stylus gets put a little bit down on the priority list. So we're thinking children in schools, adults who would love to just have something portable and light to write down a quick note, newly blinded people who perhaps can't afford a Braille writer like a Perkins or a Mountbatten, who would like to be able to write down quick notes. That would be a great tool and hopefully a low cost tool for them to be able to begin to write Braille as well. So we think that there are many, many applications for Jotadot for many people. One of the things that I'm looking forward to is being able to write myself little notes and messages and put them on post-it notes and do that easily so that you can stick, you know, your shopping list on your fridge or, you know, quick reminders to do things all over the place, just like an easily, just like a non-Braille user or a Braille impaired user would do.
Well, and also again in the employment vein, let's say that you have a reader who comes into your office to read you various documents. Instead of taking the time to file them as they're being read, you just jot a dot on a post-it note, slap it onto that document, set it aside, and blind people can have equally high inboxes stacked to the ceiling, and we can file someday later because we jotted a dot.
That's right.
When will we be able to buy these?
We're just in the first off tool sample, so we've spent out the capital expenditure, which is the really hard part, spending an awful lot of money on the tooling. And the units we have here are the first ones off those toolings. So they'll need a little tweaking, but these are mechanical issues. They're not electronic and software and all of those other sort of things that often need a bit of black magic. This is a straight mechanical engineering issue. So we're hoping to have units available shipping in May this year. So it's only about 2 months away.
And do we yet know how they will be available in the U.S.?
We haven't been able to establish that yet, and that's one of the reasons for coming over here and visiting CSUN is to meet with potential distributors and to organise exactly how we're going to do that.
Well, once you get that sorted out, if you will let me know, I will certainly make it known to our listeners where they can see and buy a Jotadot.
There is a website called www.jotadot.com.
Say that 3 times fast, I do. www.jotadot.com, right?
That's the one.
All right. Is there anything that you would like to say, either of you, that I've not asked you?
I'd like to just mention that this was really one of the first big innovations in simple Braille writing. So we're particularly keen to see it work because I think there's a need for a whole range of devices. If you look at what a sighted child has to choose from in terms of simple writing devices, they have hundreds of choices. A blind student has very limited choices, so we want Jotadot to be the first of many. Hopefully a bigger size one next and so forth, but we've got to make this one successful first.
As an adamant believer and user of Braille, and one who, I love Braille. I love my Braille.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that this is on the market, and I can't wait to see it be a smashing success.
Thank you very much, Marlena.
Well, thank you for joining us here on ACB Radio. For ACB Radio, this is Marlena Lieberg, direct from CSUN 2004.
As always, very many thanks to our contributors this week and from all the main menu team. Until next time, bye for now.